Sure, Mr. Chairman, we are calling to order the regular board meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the regular board meeting for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the regular board meeting for Austin Affordable PFC. So I'm calling the roll to open up all three meetings. Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Bailey? Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Bailey again?
Here.
And Chairman Ritchie?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, all three board meetings are open at 12:09 p.m.
All right, we have a quorum, so we will begin our meeting. So item number one, citizen communication. Is there anyone who has signed up to speak and address the board?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have specific people who've signed up, but we'll call out a general call. And I'd like to start with Ms. Elshire. Would you like to speak, Mary, to the board?
No, thank you. I'm just listening today.
Great. I know Ms. Zenobia Joseph has also indicated an interest in speaking. Ms. Joseph, would you like to address the board?
Yes, Mr. Gerber, did you want me to speak now?
That would be great. And just so that everybody's advised, the board has a limit on public comments to no more than 3 minutes. So please mind the time limits. Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Thank you, members. I'm Zenobia Joseph. My comments are specifically related to the Federal Register for Project Connect. I just wanted to make the board members aware that there are approximately 6 days remaining to make comments on the orange line and the blue line. The orange line north of US 183 is actually 24 to 30 years, and the blue line is actually the area on Riverside, which was rezoned October 17, 2019. So it is inequitable, and I would just call to your attention that there is an uprooted study, and Heather Way, one of the professors that wrote the study from the University of Texas at Austin, actually said that the city did not listen to the report that was given to them. I just want to call to your attention as well, the reason that it's important to make the comments is because those comments will actually determine whether or not Capital Metro receives the federal funding. As you may be aware, the resolution that you passed for Project Connect was $7.1 billion, and the project relies on 45% federal funding. But as an update, I just want you to know that the tunnel bill failed, and I hate to say it was a partisan issue, but it actually was. Our representatives locally, all the Democrats, were behind Project Connect, but the Republican senators actually listened to me when I actually told them about Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits discrimination based on race, color, or national origin. And as you may be aware, it's 60 minutes for blacks in Northeast Austin, and it's 6 minutes for the bus Southwest and Central. And so that means that African Americans wait 10 times longer for the bus. And specifically to your task at hand, I would just call to your attention, Mr. Chair, that Espero Rutland, where you have some vouchers for the veterans, it was stated in your last meeting, that area lost its bus, 240 Rutland, which was $945,000 on June 3rd, 2018. And so while I certainly recognize that you look at more than transportation, I just want you to know that it's important for the city to reinstate these routes or Capital Metro, and for you to at least ask them to make sure that before you put the formerly homeless people on these bus in the area with no bus route, that they do consider they need transportation to get to jobs. And I would just tell you that, lastly, that the people at Community First Village, it's 60 minutes for them as well. So if you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time and appreciate you allowing me to make my comments.
Ms. Joseph, thank you for those comments. I would just like to say that I appreciate your thoughts on Riverside and on the blue line. And if you had any written thoughts that you could share with us, as you know, we have properties at Lakeside where that line is proposed to go near. And then we also have properties on Riverside as well. and as we work to serve low-income people. I'd welcome seeing your analysis if you felt comfortable sharing it with the staff team.
Yes, Mr. Gerber, as the meeting goes on, I'll press the send button. It just takes a while sometimes to condense the information, so I apologize for not getting it to you, but the link will be up front in the memo, and thank you so much for asking.
Commissioners, are there any questions for Ms. Joseph? Are there other members of the public who wish to address the board? So this will be the final call for any members of the general public who wish to address the board. There'll be other opportunities.
Can you hear
me
now? Can you hear us?
Yes, go ahead, please. If you would,
please,
if you could announce your name and spell it for us so we have it down correctly in the minutes.
Colleen, C-O-L-L-E-E-N, Quigley, Q-U-I-G-L-E-Y, my son Riley, my adult son. Riley, R-I-L-E-Y.
We
would like, first of all, I love the information that I just heard. I just love being part of these.
We recently become, well, to politely put it, in between places, and especially within the current Austin housing market. I've found it very hard to find a place.
Can we back up and say that we were given a notice of non-renewal of our lease at Lexington Hills Apartments, which is a new acquisition of HACA. So we, for all of my faults, and it's totally my fault, in the last 6 years, I have done an amazing turnaround.
Okay, so we have found it very hard in the current market to find a place, especially with the current economic situation of Austin's housing market. We were hoping to hopefully from these meetings glean more information as to how to possibly qualify for one of the vouchers that was previously discussed in the last meeting, since we wish to very much not be homeless. And we thankfully have still both retained both of our forms of employment, and we hope to hopefully come out of the rut that we are currently in terms of our housing situation. So any information regarding affordable housing or those vouchers would be greatly appreciated.
Sure. Let me, if I can, give you a phone number, and I'm going to ask you to call it. It's a. Do you have a piece of paper handy?
Yes.
It's 512-477-4488.
We're sitting in the parking lot right now, and I'm sorry, Riley, but I'm a little passionate about this.
Yes, ma'am. I understand. Our board is not able to take action on your specific item because it's involving your own personal lease item. So, Ms. Quigley, what I'm going to do is ask you to come into our front lobby, and if you would wait there, a member of our team will come and visit with you and try to see if we can individually address your concern. Okay? But if you go to the front lobby, you'll see either Hopi or Sandra, and one of them will be there. And just tell them you're waiting for Mike Gerber or a member of our team, and we'll get somebody down there in just a few minutes, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you kindly.
Thank you for calling in today. Are there other members of the public who wish to address the board? Just to make sure there's no technical issue, are there any other members of the public who wish to address the board during this public comment period? We'll have an out. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Enter *6 to unmute if you have called in.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and assume that there's no other callers, but if we missed you, there's other opportunities to speak during the individual items that the board will hear today. So thanks for bearing with us as we continue to work through the technology. Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready to go to the public hearing for the proposed Henderson at Rhinelee development.
All right, let's proceed.
Ms. Wardner, do you want to give a quick overview? And then we'll go to open up for public comments.
Yes, I sure can. Good morning, board, staff, and guests. Today we are presenting the Henderson on Rhinelee. This property is within the Austin city limits. It is located in North Austin, south of Highway 290, right off the 35, right behind that huge Target that they just rehabbed. This is a partnership with LDG Multifamily. It will be 306 family units. The income will be served from 50% to 70% area median family income, and the unit mix will be equally distributed between one and two bedrooms.
Thank you. I know there's a representative from LDG as well here on the call, and I don't know if Justin or anyone has any additional information prior to the public hearing that needs to be shared, but want to give them an opportunity.
This is Justin Arts. I have no comment.
Okay. Then we're open for public comment on the Henderson at Rhinelee development. Is there anyone who wishes to make public comment on this proposed property? Just asking one last time, is there anyone wishing to make any public comment on the Henderson at Rhinelee development? Hearing none, then the public comment period is now closed. This public hearing is now closed. Mr. Chairman, I think we can go to the consent agenda for HACA.
All right, so we'll go to the consent agenda. So on the consent agenda is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on May 20th, 2021. Are there any corrections that need to be made to the minutes? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number one, which is the approval of the board minutes from the May 20th meeting.
I move approval of the May 20th minutes.
There's a motion by Commissioner Breckenhall, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any right. opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go to item number two.
Mr. Chair, item number two is an update on HACA's actions related to the coronavirus, COVID-19, and updating you on HACA's resident client support center. Pilar Sanchez, I think, is on the line, and I'll let her do the quick briefing or whatever member of her team is going to present. Pilar, you there?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Yes, we have the same activities happening. We're still working with several partners on food insecurity, and we've actually added additional partners to help our residents secure food. We're still operating the HACA Support Center. We had 104 inbound calls this last month, and they fell into three general categories: resident concerns related to other residents, parking passes, security issues. Was the first one. The second was assistance with rent and utility, and we referred them to several programs. And calls from our Section 8 residents. So we are getting about 10 calls per week from residents who just want to talk. And Mr. Gerber really wanted us to be there for that. And so they, most of them call every week, and it's the same person, the same people. So we're happy to talk to them every week. About 450 outbound tests were made in May to notify residents of the COVID-19 vaccines that we're providing on site. We did find that several of our elderly had other needs, and so when we made those outbound calls, and so we were able to connect them to several resources. So please see page one on your board book for the info. I'm sorry, it's page one of my report, which has more information about the resource center. And I would like to add that we also use the resource center to contact our elderly and disabled residents to remind them about MayFest, and that turned out to be a great event. The Boys and Girls Club and CIS continue to provide services, additional services, and different services based on the virtual learning. And, for example, CIS is conducting porch visits, but they're still providing services. And Anthony Schmucker, our Bringing Health Home Catalyst, continues to coordinate with Austin Public Health to bring vaccines to our properties. And tests, COVID tests as well to the properties. The COVID tests are now on a call basis, so anyone that wants one would call us and they would go to their unit. And in regards to funding, we have now received over $400,000 in grant funds regarding to address COVID, health, and Storm Uri. As far as our rent program, we have spent all but $3 million, actually paid out $3 million to over 3,000 families. I'm sorry, we've paid out over $22 million for over 3,000 families. The average that we're paying for each family is about $5,800 in rent and fees. So we think that we will be able to allocate all $25 million that was first allocated within the next 2 weeks. But City Council did approve an additional $6 million that the city is adding to our contract any day now. That should take us through July. And we understand that the Department of Treasury has allocated $35 million to the City of Austin for this type of rental assistance. So about $42 million is being added to our contract between now and the end of July. And so we're happy to continue this service for the city and for renters who really need this assistance. We should be able to help another 3,000 to 4,000 families with those funds. And lastly, I would like to tell you a little bit about a grant that we are working on. And if it's okay, if you'll indulge me, I'd like to tell you a little bit about it, because if you all are in favor of us submitting this grant, we can receive additional points for the grant is seen much more favorably when we have discussed it with our board, at least let you know about it. So we're applying to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for a Family Self-Sufficient Demonstration Development Grant. Yes, they're calling it Family Self-Sufficiency as well, but it is very different from the one that we received from HUD. Through this grant, staff will work with Administration for Children and Families and another third-party technical assistance provider to improve our services by testing the effectiveness of our initiatives and conducting an implementation evaluation. Because our Austin Pathways nonprofit has, the administration of it has changed a lot in the last year and a half, this was something that we've had in our strategic plan to develop new metrics and a new service delivery model. So we want to make sure that we're evaluating our programs and our new service delivery model throughout to make sure that we're going in the right direction. If we are awarded, the grant would be approximately $300,000 for 2 years. The vast majority of the funds will be used to cover salaries as they participate in these types of evaluation activities. It's a national grant competition, so it'll be very, very competitive, but it fits very nicely with our strategic plan in our nonprofit Awesome Pathways. And so with us today is Barbara Jackson, and maybe even Justin Bro might have joined us to answer any questions if you have any.
We're very excited by this opportunity and appreciate Justin, who's been with us for a number of years. It's good to see you, and thanks for your leadership and service as our grants manager, and to Pilar and the team for coming together on this. It's really a wonderful opportunity that holds real benefits for our residents, which is what we're all about. Are there any questions from the board?
Yeah, Barbara, how many people will this grant serve?
It won't serve residents particularly directly. It's an indirect benefit. It's gonna fund staff to conduct evaluation of our programs.
For all of the self-sufficiency programs?
Justin, is it for all of our programs or just specific?
So it'll focus on the programs that fall under the Austin Pathways umbrella, so workforce development, youth educational success, our case management and service coordination with our specialists, and I'm neglecting one, but so, yeah, so those core programs, it won't fall under, you know, HACA's FSS grant with HUD, for example.
What's the timing on this grant?
So the grant is due at the beginning of July, on July 2nd. Generally, it takes a month or two before we hear back. I don't know if they've released when applying agencies will be notified. So, you know, I would predict 3 months from the due date, we should be kicking off if we were awarded funds.
And it's a two-year grant.
Correct.
Pilar, I have a question about one of the earlier reports you made regarding the grants that you received for COVID. Mm-hmm. This seems to be a lot of money. Did you expend all of it, and how was it expended?
Yeah, each one was different. I can give you some examples. For example, not all of it has been spent. For example, we just received $100,000 from United Healthcare, and we haven't started those services yet. But we assisted 100 families with $1,000 with one of the United Way grants. And I know Barbara's on here. Another one, the $75,000 from St. David's Foundation, is underway, and that one is to assist our elderly at North Loop with health and wellness programming and connecting them to the outside world, whether it's other services through digital inclusion, so we have devices for them, training on devices, and internet access that we've provided through those $75,000. Atmo Naturas has provided some funding for our youth employment program. There's a roving service coordinator that is being paid out of the Anderson Foundation, $20,000. Anthony just got a $25,000 grant from United Way for vaccination equity efforts, and that one just started. The $7,500 from the NEF Housing Charities, that is related to one of Ron's properties that reached out to us and wanted to help our residents directly impacted by Winter Storm Uri. And so we provided gift cards and some money to our Chalmers residents who were impacted out of that fund. So there's a long list on there. A whole lot of things happening. Some of them have been completed, especially the ones that are listed at the top, and the others are underway.
I guess I'm trying to find out, was the money directed to help our residents either get tested or receive vaccinations? Did we hire people to encourage vaccinations? I mean, I'm not getting a sense of how it's being used.
Yeah, so the vaccinations and the tests were actually provided for free. We were the
unknown caller.
The first time that we had vaccinations at our sites was at Lakeside. And community care actually came out to our site and went knocking door by door and conducting the test right there at their door. And so that was all free. It was all coordination between the both agencies. And then the recent vaccinations that we have are also provided for free, and that's with Austin Public Health. Sylvia and Anthony worked with, and Mike worked with Austin Public Health to convince them to come out to our sites, and they did. And not only are they providing vaccinations to our residents, but any staff that show up to that site on that date and time. So the vaccinations and the testing have all been free. It's been a lot of staff time and effort bringing those services on site, but we haven't had to spend additional funds other than staff time.
Okay, thank you.
And I will say that at least one of our St. David's grants that's listed at the top was used to provide any families that reported to us that they had tested positive. Our community health workers would visit their home from the outside, right? They'd come with a care package for them. It would have medications, thermometers, oxygen monitors. They would have food. And we would call them on an ongoing basis to check on them, to make sure that there wasn't anything additional they would need, and to remind them to stay isolated. So one of the St. David's grants did cover that.
Okay. Thank you.
Before I conclude, if there's no questions about the grant application, I did want to let Commissioner Duncan Hall know that we provided a one-pager, it might be two pages actually, in the report in your booklet about the summer programs. You had asked for the number of kids that will be served this summer, and it's 550 with those programs. All the partners and programs are listed on that report for you, with a description of services by partner and by program. And once we start having more activities, we'll be able to report on actual numbers. So far, the report we're providing you is the targeted numbers.
Right. I did read that. Thank you for that. But one question that occurred to me as I'm going through all this, I know you're doing a lot with partners, but about the food, are kids going to be fed all summer long? I saw there was a cutoff with AISD, and I just couldn't figure it out.
I'll let Barbara answer that, but we do have some partners providing that. Mm-hmm. Barbara?
Sure. Yeah. As many years, we have a summer food program that we do in conjunction with a food bank, and that is a little smaller this year because they only allow us to serve where AISD isn't within a certain distance. So we have five properties that we're serving meals at, and it's a drive-up service, and they get meals for each child, 7 days worth of meals, and a backpack with other things for the weekends.
Okay.
And that's already started. It started the first full week, so last week after school got out. And at the other sites, we're directing the families to the schools. For instance, at BTW, we couldn't serve food on site because the school district is serving this food right down at Oak Springs Elementary.
Okay. But is that going to be all summer long, Barbara? Because there was a mention saying it would go through June, so I'm questioning what's happening in July, August, and stuff.
Our sites go all summer, the five that we have, And if the school district's going to cut off, then we'll have to, you know, work with them for a plan for those sites. Because they, again, we weren't allowed to have anything on site because it would overlap with the school district. So so we should be able to work out a plan. But last summer, they did extend all summer, the school district did, so.
Okay. Will you keep us advised about that? Because I know you're not letting the kids go hungry.
Right.
I just know that.
Yeah, we're working hard on the food and distribution issues, and we've got great partnerships, but there's just always, there's just an immense amount of need.
Although it's getting, it was a logistical nightmare as far as I can see, but
it's,
I know
getting a lot better. It's gotten a lot better as things start to open up. You know, the access to fresh food and services has gotten a lot better, but obviously the most vulnerable continue to struggle, and we're working really hard. Barbara and Leilani and Lar and Catherine and the team are doing just a great job connecting as many folks as we can. So, Lar, anything else we need to share? Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner. What'd you say?
Just keep us posted.
We will. We're really proud of the work that the team's done in the summer slide, COVID slide. Issues and our partnerships with communities and schools and Boys and Girls Clubs and others. It's not perfect, but it's a darn good model, and we feel really pleased about the numbers of kids and hopefully the benefits that will accrue to them as they start the school year. And we've had great partners in AISD. Laura and I have talked to Dr. Elizalde at AISD. We've talked to Dr. Rhodes at ACC and have had lots of conversations about how we address school readiness and getting more kids in college who are graduating. And so we're excited to see more kids applying for scholarships. We're seeing more, connectivity with the school district now under Dr. Elizalde, which has been very, very helpful. And in fact, as Pilar mentioned, the rent program to you all, we've had, you know, great response from ASD through their family centers, trying to get more folks who are vulnerable and at risk of needing to move for eviction because they can't pay their rent, participating in that program and that safety net, and keeping, you know, the AISD schools whole, which is really, you know, or is more whole than they would be if the family was to be evicted. And we feel like we're making good, strong progress and inroads there. So a lot of really vital work happening in Pathways. So thanks, as always, to the board for your support.
Okay, Mike, you just reminded me of two other questions I want to ask.
Sure.
Scholarship issue. I read in the monthly reports that only 21 students applied for scholarships this year, which is a low number, isn't it, compared to what we've done? Yes.
We saw actually a lot of universities and colleges across the country saw lower enrollment rates due to the pandemic. We asked Dr. Rhodes about that at ACC. He said they hadn't seen a drastic drop this year for them, but they heard that was happening in other places. We definitely saw it here. And Barbara and her team worked really hard. They extended the deadline at least twice. We got very few applications by the first deadline, and they had to do extensive outreach to get the ones that they got.
Do you
have anything else, Barbara?
Just that the group that did apply, we had a total of 24 apply, and 23 we were able to approve. One person actually pulled back their application, deciding not to go to college this year. But of those that applied, it's a really strong group. So I feel very good about those 23 that were about ready to award. We have to go through our independent review process, but the ones that have applied are really strong candidates, and I think our money is very well spent supporting their education.
Right. And we believe this year we'll probably do close to $75,000 in scholarships, Barbara?
It's actually about 60.
60.
You know, Barbara, offhand, what percent are continuing students and which one are newly high school graduates?
I haven't done that analysis yet, but running through my mind, I would say about 30% high school seniors or new graduates, about 30% continuing. And okay. The rest of them are older adults, brand new.
Okay, cool. And then the second question I had involved the training we're doing for these paraeducators, the resident educators. Are we paying them some stipend for getting trained and assisting other parents? And if so, what?
They are receiving a stipend during the training portion. They get $200 a month while they're training. And while they're quote-unquote interning or ambassadors, they get $1,000 a month for 20 hours a week of service.
Okay. That's very useful. Are we increasing the numbers of paraeducators?
I haven't had a chance to share it with anyone, but I just found out from United Way that we got that grant for one more year. So we'll be able to continue. That's a $35,000 grant, and that allows us to fund the training and stipends for an extended period.
Are we putting in any of our own money in addition to the $35,000 that we're getting from United Way?
This last year, the own money was the money that the board had put forth to address the COVID slide. So there was a portion in there that went towards stipends. And that is going to end at the end of the summer, but we have been able to leverage other funding as well. So
I just think that this is really a good idea. And the more we can increase and the more parents we can involve in this, the better. So if we could get 50% of our parents involved, I'm saying this is nothing but win-win-win. So I'd rob Peter to pay Paul on this one. But Mike Gerber didn't hear it, so.
You think the paraeducator model is a good one?
Yes, I do. I want to see more involvement. It's got to be a win for the parents. It's got to be a win for whoever they're helping.
I agree. I confess I've not. There's always some need to evaluate there and to take a deeper look.
And yeah, I would love that. Kind of course, you know, I love evaluation. I love data. I'm fixated on it.
Yeah, Pilar, why don't you and me and Barbara maybe think about that question a little bit? Because I'd love to know if that investment of time and resources pays off more than in other things. I mean, it was a unique pandemic solution. But it may not be. It'd be interesting to know whether or not it's a longer term sustainable program, or if it's worth it. Need to be thinking about other things. I like the engagement. I want to make sure it works for the kids
and the parents. Don't forget the parents.
Parents, too, absolutely.
You learn by you when you're tutoring. You're learning yourself.
Yeah. Commissioners, are there any other questions related to item number two? I do want to move on. There's an agenda, Pilar, so let's wrap this item up. You got anything, any last thought you want to share, and then let's keep going.
I promise to keep quiet for 2 minutes.
Okay. If there's no other questions, I would suggest we move on to item number three, which is an update on AAT's acquisition and development programs. And Mr. Cole, do you want to do a quick overview of what we're going to talk about today and performance of the portfolio?
I'll be real brief. Thank you, Mr. Gerber, commissioners, staff, guests. Just a real quick statement on the overview on the acquisition side. I will tell you across our entire portfolio in all sectors of Austin, We have seen just a huge uptick in leasing activity and showings and viewings. It's getting very close to pre-pandemic times where the activity is very, very robust, and we're seeing our occupancies on several of our sites now, even our big ones, creeping up to 100% occupancy. And we suspect that as we get into July, that's even going to grow further based on the amount of traffic and the indications that we're getting out there on the site. So just wanted to give you that it is very, very, very active. I also wanted to share our last acquisition that you all approved, the bridge at South Park Meadows. The second day we were in operation, we signed 5 new leases, and all 5 of those leases fell between the 60 and 80% AMI range. And it was pretty fun to hear at least 2 or 3 of those residents from getting feedback from the manager. They were stunned that they were able to find a unit here as they were going up and down in all in that area and getting told they couldn't qualify. And they found units here, and so it made us all feel really good that this property that was never affordable before is now, you know, about 60% of the units, and will grow even bigger, will all be affordable. And so we were excited to see that. So that was good feedback. Also want to let you know that in the last couple of days, we've had our friends from CDT in town, Joe Riley and the president and Michael Lear. We're looking at a possible acquisition called the Schofield Park Apartments. This project is just east of MOPAC. At Schofield Ridge Parkway in a fantastic location. It's a 486-unit complex. We walked the units yesterday, and we were also joined by Commissioner Carrington, which was great to have her out there and get her input as well. We're not sure if we'll get it. It's going to be very, very, very competitive. There's many, many for-profit developer or acquisition folks trying to buy this property. But we'll keep you posted. If we're successful, this will probably come to you in July for your approval, since I think we will not be having an August board meeting, so it'll get to you fairly quickly. But it is a beautiful property built in 2000, and we're excited. We're hoping we're successful in that. And then finally, next week on Wednesday, you all approved a couple months ago the refinance of our Ben White project, which we talked about. And that will be closing on Wednesday the 23rd. And those proceeds that we will be receiving from that refinance along with LDG will be tucked away in a safe place for now. And we're going to discuss about what our future needs are in terms of affordable housing and how to appropriate those funds down the road. And we look forward to coming back to you with those suggestions and those recommendations for your approval once we just deem that necessary. They'll be here for TAP. The TAP conference, which we're all excited about, which will be in July, actually July 19th to the 21st. So we'll be pretty busy that week visiting with folks and getting a sense of where the market's going and things like that. So that's all I got for you on the acquisition side. I'm going to defer to Suzanne for a real quick update on the new construction piece, if that's okay, Mr. Gerber.
I'm going to actually ask Suzanne to go ahead and hold off, and we'll do that if we need to do that in the report piece a little later. I am pleased that we've got a large number of voucher holders that are, you know, we're kind of at an all-time high. If you look at the chart that's been provided in your board book, you know, we're serving throughout the portfolio, you know, more than 900 voucher families. Those are folks largely earning on average, you know, $12,000 a year or less. And so we feel very good, or certainly at 30% and below, we feel very good about that portfolio and the way it's performing. And you'll see under new construction an awful lot of development happening that is really benefiting folks who are in the greatest housing need and have the greatest insecurity in our community. With the board's indulgence, I would ask Mr. Chairman that we turn it over to Commissioner Carrington in her role as chair of Austin Affordable PFC to walk us through the PFC agenda, the AHC agenda, and then we'll come back to the main HACA agenda.
So I turn the gavel over to Commissioner Carrington.
Edwina, you're on mute.
There you go.
Thanks, Andrea. We will go first to the PFC agenda, which is in your board book. And we have called the meeting to order. We have certified the quorum. Is there anyone from the citizen, from the public, that would like to make comments on the agenda for the Austin Affordable PFC? Any comments from the public?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Novia.
I just wanted to ask, is the Belmont on your agenda? I'm not looking at the paper. I'm multitasking at the moment. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, the Belmont is item number number two. It'll be coming up in just a moment.
Do you want me to comment on that now?
Why don't you hold to that item?
Okay.
Any other comments on the on citizen communication? On so we're at the PF, we're on the PFC agenda.
Yes, ma'am.
So when I look and we have minutes, is there any are there any comments on the minutes of the board meeting which was held on April 15th, 2021?
I move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Apostolo. If there are no more comments, and I'll ask for approval on the consent of the minutes of the meeting on April 15th, 2021.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. So on the action items under the Austin Affordable PFC, it's my understanding that item number two is being withdrawn from the agenda. Is that correct?
No, ma'am. Item number three is going to be withdrawn. The Cypress Creek will be withdrawn, but we're going to proceed on the Belmont today.
Yes. You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize. Item number two, the Belmont Apartments, the resolution 00087, authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of multifamily housing revenue bonds, which would be series 2021. Authorizing the execution and delivery of documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing of such multifamily residential rental developments and containing other provisions relating to the subject. Suzanne? Suzanne?
Thank you, Chairman. Today, I'm presenting you the Belmont Apartments. This is the third time that you will have seen this development. The first time was in October 2020 for the initial resolution, so you can kind of gauge how long it takes us to get a new construction deal through. You saw it again last month for the public hearing. This is a property located in North Austin off of Cameron Road, just south of Runberg. It's right next to our current development, Bridget Cameron. Bridget Cameron is leasing up, and it is 70% occupied at this moment. They have a tremendous amount of traffic coming through, so we're really excited to add the Belmont right next door. The Belmont is a partnership with LDG Multifamily, and this property will serve tenants at 50% to 70% area median family income. The Cameron apartments are serving 60% and below, so we've got a little bit of extra range in there on the Belmont. This is a 146 units, and we do have 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms, which I'm really excited about for the families. Pioneer Crossing Elementary, Decker Middle School, and Maynor High School are the schools that serve this area. And I've also included with your board book a breakdown of the area median family incomes served per bedroom size. This is going to be funded. The debt provider will be Redstone, both the construction and the perm lender. LDG will be buying the credits for the equity. Right now, we're having a little bit of a challenging time getting equity in the market. There are a few reasons for that. The income averaging, which is what we're doing on this deal, a lot of the equity providers are a little nervous about it just because the IRS is supposed to come back in and give another ruling by the beginning of the year as to how the compliance piece will fit with that. The equity providers that are already doing income averaging have put into place just having extra compliance, a third-party compliance company come in and review files so that they know that everything's in compliance. With that being said, we went out for an RFP for equity, didn't get a lot of interest, kept trying with our other partners. And, you know, by the time we decided that, you know, we're getting really close to the bond expiration date, LDG was good enough to say, you know what, let's go ahead and provide the equity, get this closed. And then, and they will provide the initial equity installment of 20% at closing. And then once the next installment is due, about 50% into the construction cycle, we are bringing in another company called Hope for Kentucky. And it's a consortium of local banks that only do affordable housing investment. And they've already been vetted out. LDG has done a lot of business with them. We're 100% comfortable with them. Chris Dischinger, who's one of the principals with LDG, has relationships with all these banks. So we're real comfortable with that. So that's what's going to happen on that. This property will accept housing choice vouchers, because we have made a commitment to the board that we will accept Section 8 vouchers in all of our properties. And I think that's about it. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Suzanne related to the Belmont Apartments?
Yes, Suzanne, this breakout that you give on the apartments, like when you do the AMI breakdown, you have, for example, 16 one-bedroom, one-bath, 50% AMI. Now, explain exactly what that means. You're going to have 16 bedrooms.
Yeah, that's going to be how we're breaking down all the units in the project. So we'll have 16 one bedroom, one bath units that can only serve people at 50% AMI and below. And then we'll have another 16 units of one bedroom, one bath that can only serve 50.1 to 60% AMI. And then another section of 16 one bedrooms that can serve 60.1 to 70% AMI. So
you can be exact?
Yes, we have to be exact on this. Mm-hmm.
And you won't have any problem with that?
No, There's enough demand out there. And the good thing about having the 70% units is most of the tax credit properties are specifically 60% and below. So if you go $1 over that 60% AMI, you're out. You can't rent there. So that's what we like about the delta between the 60% and 70%. We can capture a lot of those that were over income, basically, which is kind of hard to believe it's over income. And also, we're still getting the lower, down to 50% AMI, so we're able to serve more of those clients that are in need. And that's an area that I think we're gonna have a lot of demand out there for that. And then I broke it down, you know, the same way for the 2-bedroom, the 3-bedroom, and the 4-bedroom.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen you do that before, and I was curious, could you be that exact with that breakdown and actually fulfill that breakdown?
Yes, yes.
All right. Very good.
Are there any more questions for Suzanne or Stan?
Madam Chair, I've got a question.
Yes, Commissioner Bailey.
Suzanne, go back and walk me through the financing of this. You said we put out an RFP for equity. What does that mean?
Oh, it just means that we put out a request for proposals on the who would purchase the tax credits, the equity portion of this. And we also did for the debt as well. The debt is easier kind of to come by. Equity, you know, the... Like I said, the market for income averaging, we've had some challenges in the market right now with lumber costs going up, income averaging with the IRS ruling, you know, hanging out there. Also, they just increased the 4% tax credits to a flat 4% rate as opposed to, you know, it was floating, so it was below that. So some of the equity providers are kind of oversubscribed. Some are just not wanting to do the income averaging. Some are a little leery about the lumber costs and are requiring some lumber reserves. That's why we send out a proposal trying to get the best offers we can. And that's kind of standard operating procedure for all of our deals.
And I thought generally if somebody wanted to use tax credits, they came to us and asked us if we would pair up with them because we can get them. Is that generally right?
Well, what happens is TDHCA actually, the state agency actually awards the tax credits. Then you've got to go out and find an equity provider to buy those tax credits. And each equity provider is a little bit different as far as pricing, as far as what area they want to invest in. And that's why we go out for an RFP for the equity. And our developer handles all of that on that side.
Can we use our money for the equity?
This one is over almost $11 million.
We have, in some cases, we have put in equity into different deals, but as we sort of balance out cash reserves and other operational needs, we make decisions about what's appropriate. But we have put in at different points $2, $3, $4 million in a deal. We're not opting to do that in this case.
And you go to the corporations or the investors use these so that they can get credits on their tax returns since we're tax exempt, we don't need those credits. So it's better for us to be able to use outside investors on these deals.
And those outside investors aren't necessarily the developers.
No, they're usually not. Mm-mm.
But in this instance, it is.
Yes.
Are there any conflict problems with that?
No, and it's been the case in other transactions as well, Commissioner. Different development groups have different funds. When we've entered into partnerships with NRP, they've used a variety of funds that they have available. Same is true for others that we've partnered with. It's not an uncommon practice.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Suzanne or staff on the Belmont apartments?
Commissioner Carrington, I would just note that the RFP process is a really important one. It ensures that we get the widest distribution to folks in the market. So when you're looking at equity or debt providers, just as when you're doing different aspects of the construction process, RFPs are pretty widely used as a tool to make sure that all are aware of the opportunity and can get us the best pricing. We then, our teams look at that, the submissions, and then we'll oftentimes then decide who we go into negotiations with, seeking again for, final best offer. So it's a pretty good practice. And it's the same one we use actually here as a government agency as well to make sure that we get the best pricing.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00087 authorizing the issue?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes, Commissioner Carrington. Just wanted to note that there was public comment being requested for this item.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I asked for that. Public comment related to the Belmont.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Joseph. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment is actually pretty quick. I just I reviewed this area just because Austin City Council had Northwind Apartments in the vicinity, and they actually had the same school, Decker Middle School. And I looked at the school rating, and it's a D for 2018 to 2019 in Texas Academic Performance Rating. And so my concern is simply that when there are these low-income housing tax credit developments, I know the actual application asks about schools. And so my concern is just that in this particular report, it shows predominantly students of color, 715 students, 457 Hispanic, 180 African-American, and 34 Asian, for example. And so I would just be curious to know whether or not there'll be some educational support. And also, I would just ask staff to look at that in advance. And I'm not saying anything bad about the staff, because the same issue is happening on the City of Austin side. But I just have a concern when you have minorities that are struggling, and then they, the property is next to a school that's struggling too. And so, if you could just take that into consideration, I would appreciate it. And so that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Joseph. We appreciate your comments.
You're welcome.
Anyone else from the public comment on the Belmont?
Let me respond to Ms. Joseph. That's a pretty good point. When we're looking to place things, place our properties, I know we always look at the schools. Have we ever turned down a deal because the school was bad next to it?
Yes, Commissioner, we do. And TDHCA does require a certain score that the schools have. And if they don't show that they're improving, they will turn the tax credit application down as well.
Commissioner Bailey?
Commissioner Bailey, I would also interject that we also try to, when we go into a property, we're also looking at or move into an area. The work we do also, we hope, will enhance the school district as well. One example is the Asher, where we actually are combined. Part of the provision of equity there, part of the investment there is actually being done by the Kresge Foundation, where we're doing work trying to improve educational outcomes at that property and among kids, and it has a lot of ties to the school district. So we're excited about what our involvement can actually mean for creating better schools and a better environment for kids. Sorry, Ron.
Do we work with the school district?
I was going to add on to that. We will. And actually, TDHCA requires, certain social service programs or community service programs on each property when under TDHCA guidelines, and we try to do more than that by having so what we do is assess our residents, we assess our needs there, and we provide certain community benefit services to the property, whether that be for adults, whether it be health and education, whether it be nutrition, whether it's banking, whether it's school tutoring, Quite often we'll bring our CARES teams in and we'll provide those programs, after school tutoring, after school help. And I think so each property that we have across our portfolio, especially on the tax credit side, it's not only required, I say it's critical, but it's mandatory under TDHCA guidelines. And we try to do, try to obviously do more than that with our partners, especially with LDG. They're very receptive to that. So I think what Mr. Gerber's commented on, I think we actually enhance that situation there by providing some of this to the community's community benefit that we'll bring to the property through our either our CARES team or through our community programs and learning education classes and things like that we're required to put in place.
All right, that sounds good.
Hey, Chuck, just FYI, there was a bill passed a couple of sessions ago by Representative Collier that required that there be greater attention or weight put toward these tax credit applications regarding high-performing schools. And I think you get deemed if you're located near a low-performing school.
Okay. So
there's law in the books on this.
So this is not a new issue that I just came up with.
Yep.
But it's a good one, Chuck, and it's one that folks have been grappling with over a period of time. So I'm glad you brought it up. Are there any more questions or comments related to the issuance of bonds for the Belmont? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve Resolution 00087, issuance, delivery, and sale of multifamily housing revenue bonds, Series 2021, execution and delivery of the documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing and containing other provisions relating to the subject. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
I'm sorry, was that Tyra, were you?
No, Carl and Mary.
Okay. Carl made the motion, and the second, Mary. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, thank you. We go next to the agenda for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Commissioner Carrington, if I could just interject. So item number three, just making note that Cypress Creek will not be heard today. But I wanted to make sure, since we have a number of callers calling in, is there anyone on the call who is calling in for that particular item, if I could ask that? Is there anyone calling in about Cypress Creek Apartments at Howard Lane? Great. I just wanted to make sure. If so, I was going to direct them to staff to engage. But, Madam Chair, I think we can be done. I think we can wrap up the PFC agenda.
I would like motion to call the PFC meeting, to close the PFC meeting.
So moved.
Okay, motion by Chuck. Second by Mary. Was that you? Tyra? Second by Tyra. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So now moving to the agenda of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. The meeting has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on this agenda item? This Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda item. No comment from the public. Then moving on to the consent item, which is the approval of the minutes of April 15th, 2021. Do I hear, are there any comments on the minutes? All right, hearing none. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of April 15th, 2021?
I move approval.
I move.
Okay, motion by Tyra, second by
Mary.
Mary, thank you. Any more comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? OK, Okay, hearing none. Thank you. Moving on to the agenda item, the action item for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which is item number 2. And it is the approval of resolution of 00184, authorizing Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents and take all action that's necessary to facilitate the development of the Belmont Apartments, cause AAHC's wholly owned subsidiary, AAHC Belmont General Partner, LLC, to execute an amended and restated agreement of limited partnership, cause the partnership to enter into the development financing for the project, and number 4, cause AAHC and or the general partner to execute any further documentation as necessary or desirable to allow the transaction to move forward. Suzanne, again.
I don't think I have anything new to add on to about the property, but as the agenda item does read, this will allow us to close and sign all closing documents. We are anticipating closing, if you approve this transaction, on July 1st or 2nd. Our bond reservation does expire July 18th, so we need to close before then if you approve these. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
No questions for Suzanne or Ron. Ron doesn't get off the hook, but.
I move approval.
All righty. I'll call for the motion. Commissioner Duncan Hall moves for approval. Is there a second?
I second.
All righty. Thank you, Mary. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you, commissioners. Item number 3 is the Cypress Creek development on Howard Lane. And as you heard from the PFC agenda, this has been pulled from the agenda for this month. Is there anything that staff would like to say about this particular transaction?
I just wanted to add, you know, this one we are kind of re-looking at it budget-wise, and we've elected to turn the bond reservation back and reapply. We feel that lumber prices will be going down and stabilizing, and it'll be a better time for us to bring this back to you later on. But we will continue to work on it, and you will see it again.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Is there any more business to come before the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation? If not, I would like a motion to close the meeting at 1:21 this afternoon. Do you have a motion?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary.
I move to move. Yes.
Tara, was that you seconding?
I will, yes.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that closes the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And Mr. Chair takes us back to item number 4. Of the agenda for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we're at item number 4, presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 2706 by the board, approving a resolution of the Austin Affordable Housing Public Facilities Corporation, providing for the issuance of its multifamily housing revenue bond series 2021, and to take such other action as necessary or convenient to facilitate the development of the Belmont Apartments. With that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number 4.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. I don't remember seeing anywhere in here, Suzanne, and maybe I just missed it. What are we talking about in the amount of tax-exempt bonds for this transaction?
We were approved for $30 million, and the final cost will be just a little bit lower than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I got one more question.
Yes, Commissioner Bailey, go for it.
And it could have covered a lot of things. Will, if the Fed ups interest rates, how will that affect our business? Ron or Suzanne?
Sorry about that. It depends. I guess every deal's deal specific. Obviously, if interest rates move higher, it allows us to take less debt because our debt coverage ratios change. It makes the deal a little bit more difficult. And so, you know, it's kind of a, you try to anticipate, you can do some forward locks, you can get some forward commitments on debt. But for the most part, you know, the interest rates do carry some risk to every deal that we bring forward. And I think, you know, we take that into consideration along with everything else that we're dealing with in this market right now as to whether or not it's a safe bet or the numbers still work. And keep in mind, everything's underwritten by multiple departments, whether it's TDHCA, whether it's our investor, whether it's our lender. And I think when we look at these deals, we always project a little higher. You know, we're always a little bit above the market to make sure that we can successfully achieve, you know, our debt coverage ratios and not put us in a position of risk, but of a successful project. But interest rates do have an effect on our deals. Absolutely.
Does it have an effect on our deals already ongoing?
No, sir. Those are already locked. And, you know, where they will affect us is sometime down the road when these notes mature, and they're usually 10-year notes on the debt side. And as we look to refinance those pieces, there will be rate, you know, there'll be some rate sensitivity there depending on what the rate is. So that's down the road. But everything else we do is pretty much fixed and locked. When we rate lock our deals way back in the day, those are fixed, and then that's sold out on the market, and so that amount is never going to change until the note is called or until the note is due.
Right now, is your comfort level pretty good?
Well, the Fed's
unsettled.
The Fed's kept the rates at zero. You know, obviously with inflation, I don't know how long that will tend that way. I've been a little bit unsettled over the last 2 months, and for several reasons. So as Suzanne, and that's why you see some of these deals being postponed, because there's been a variety of things that have affected these deals, and we want to put risk at the top of the line. From the housing authority's perspective, that we're not doing something that's going to put us in any jeopardy. So we're taking the safer approach in hoping the market corrects itself from many angles, from the tax credit pricing side to the construction cost side to the interest rate side. You know, it's a little difficult time right now. I'm not concerned because the need is still there. It's, you know, where we really get in trouble is if we're building stuff and we don't have any demand. And what we're seeing is that demand is not only where it was pre-pandemic, but I think it's extremely worse on the affordable side based on all our portfolio and the amount of activity that's going on out there. So there is some positives there. And we'll see where the market takes us. Right now, all our deals are pretty well locked and secured, so we're in pretty good shape on the existing stuff.
Do we insure our deals?
Insure our deals as to property casualty liability
financial.
Well, financially, our deals are insured through our guarantees by our developer, and that's a good thing that HACA is not part of those guarantees. And when we do these corporations or these LLCs, as you see, each one is separately, the risk of that is subject only to that LLC and not to the overall portfolio or any other, you know, in other words, you can't get through, you know, that's, if something catastrophic were ever to happen, it would be focused on that one individual asset, nothing else. But our developer partner, our partners are the ones that that financially back these, and along with the lender and investor who require operating deficit guarantees. During COVID, we were required to put up a year's worth of additional mortgage payments in case something went wrong. So we've got plenty of buckets to go to in case anything ever happened. We're not seeing anything close to that at this point. I could assure you of that. But there's many buckets in our pile of cash. You know, all put away for certain emergencies that we can tap into. You know, during the course of these properties as they're being built or as they're being as they're being leased up and things like that.
Well, I guess what I was thinking, and we're a little different than I guess. Kind of what I had in mind, but it would it be advisable or is it even plausible that we could go get an insurance policy that will pay us what we would have gotten had the deal not gone south? Now, there may not be anybody writing that kind. I bet Lloyd's, I bet you could get Lloyd's to do it. But as things start shaking up a little bit, is that something we ought to think about? Or is it just, we're not going to lose anything, we're not going to worry about stuff that we would have gotten that we're not going to get?
I think each deal is viable on its own after we kind of pressure test it in the capital stack building process and then getting to closing. And so we have a fair degree of certainty. As long as we can fill the units up to a certain level and have what we need by way of reserves to continue to maintain the property appropriately, we when we enter into an agreement we're and close the deal, we feel like all the pressure testing has been done to say that deal can stand on its own. There are insurances and protections and other things that are built into it. I don't think we would necessarily need to add, or I don't think the standard has become adding, you know, performance bonds or other types of protections. That might become the case if the market were to suddenly go haywire. And you saw some of that happen when, there was the financial collapse. You know, back, you know, 2008 and the TCAP program came into place, all sorts of new protections and guarantees. And, you know, if you were selling your credits to the Treasury, you know, that engendered all sorts of new requirements and issues that came up both at the federal level and at the state level, and anything that a city might wish to add to it. So I think the system will self-regulate. Well, I was going to say self-regulate. We'll adapt to it, to the circumstance. But we feel confident with the Belmont, with what we've got, that we can get that done. And the market is telling us we can, and where we need additional protections in place, the market standards for those are already there. If for some reason something goes haywire, we're going to know pretty quick because some actor is not going to be able to do the deal. So, for example, if lumber suddenly tomorrow goes up 50% because of some act of God and the fires in the West and other things, or, you know, if the market collapses in a particular area, we're going to get to a place where we're just not going to be able to close the deal. But once we do close it, then we feel pretty confident we'll be able to execute. If there's pieces of it that are, again, not lined up, though, you know, we'll know because the market standard will change in the development process and make it So one of the things we've had to deal with, for example, in Rockford, you know, where Suzanne talked about the sliding 4% bond, 4% tax credit. So on 4% tax credits, it's never been a true 4%. Sometimes it's 3.372 and sometimes it's 3.64 or sometimes it's a little more, a little less. And because it's floated, that's required some adapting. The market responded to that adapting. It's a little different kind of thing. But now it's set at 4. So there's more of the thing that in all these developments that everybody loves, which is predictability and stability. And so, Rhonda, am I saying that? So we're really working hard to ensure as much of that as we can. But your point's spot on. If more is needed, we'll be looking and working with our attorneys and Bill Walters online and others, you know, Barry Palmer and, you know, Orlando. You know, we will certainly get guidance from them, and we'll hear about it from those who are putting forward the money, about what protections they're going to want to see put in place as well.
Okay. That's the area I was just asking about.
No, it's a really important area and one that, and I think I'm kind of glad you got a chance to sort of see an item put on the agenda in the form of Cypress Creek, a great project, a really exciting project with a strong development team, with a developer with a history to execute, and a deal that we're really looking forward to doing when we can. But you're seeing the instability in the market tell us, hey, you know, labor, lumber, other things are higher. Things just aren't lined out right. We can't now go to the board yet. There's too much unpredictability there. We've got a hold, and so that's why we've taken that item off. And there are several more that never make it to the agenda that Ron works through. So I'm kind of glad this one made it to the agenda. But I think it's important for you to know the forces that Ron and Suzanne both shared that they're working through within the market. And if you just go to the front page of today's newspaper where, you know, Regions Housing sets records, sales records, you'll see a quote from Terry Mitchell, who's an extraordinary affordable developer here in town, who talks about he's never seen a market like this. So it's it really is a different time with different forces that we've got to watch carefully. And that's what Ron and Suzanne and our team, you know, are doing very, very carefully. So you may see more things get added to the agenda. And then, you know, in less than a week's time, we decide, hey, you know, this isn't ready for prime time. We need to pull it back. But at the core, once we get it to the point where a vote gets taken, and of course, there's another probably, you know, 120 days before we close. So a lot can happen in that time too. And we've had things that have fallen through, you know, there too. But in general, once we've gotten to this point, we're closing deals, and I think on everything we've closed the deal that this board's approved, and you know, nothing has fallen through. And that's because of a lot of the due diligence that we do beforehand. But if we can't get there on the front end, you know, we think y'all are an important last point of sort of protection. Yeah, you know, if it's not approved, yeah, you know, if we can't feel confident in the due diligence we've done and how things have been built out, then we will say hold. Ask you all to hold.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks. So, Madam Chair, I think Mr. Chair, I think we're done with that item.
Well, just to kind of go back to what Chuck was saying, Chuck and Mike did show you the front page of the Statesman, and what I've been hearing through other real estate circles is this is kind of a crazy market because it is, even with COVID, the market was still in Austin, just, you know, as hot as it can be, and it's going to get even hotter. So I think, again, you're going to see a lot of starts and stops because while there's a huge demand for affordable housing, because as the market rates increase and the inventory is just so little, prices are just going to continue to increase, which means it puts pressure on the affordable housing market. Because I think right now the average home price is Austin is somewhere just south of $500,000. I mean, somewhere around $490 million, and that's a lot of money just for an average home in Austin, Texas. If you think about where we were many, many years, about 10 years ago, and where we've come, the appreciation in the market has just gone up. And as those prices go higher, it puts more pressure on the affordable housing market to find place, to provide affordable places for people to live, especially as people start going back to work, needing to work in the central city. It just puts more and more pressure on organizations like us to provide that housing stock. So we're here to try to meet some of that demand, but obviously our first priority is the folks that we transition from public housing into RAD. But to the extent that we are able to help out in this other market, we help out the community at large. And again, Suzanne, you had made a comment about lumber. So what's the forecast on that? Because I know obviously building materials, different ones. A couple of years ago, it was all the steel in China. Now it's lumber because of the fires, the winters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what's kind of the forecast on prices related to lumber?
They're starting to come down already. The lumber mills are being staffed better now, and the transportation getting the lumber to the different projects is starting to increase as well. So there's not a backlog of lumber just sitting there waiting to be transported, and they're able to put more out. So it's looking good, everything we've seen.
Okay. And then the other issue that I think we're all going to have to deal with, Chuck, is labor, because as the labor force kind of shrunk, trying to get everybody back to work, and then, you know, different contractors, even before COVID, there were folks who were competing for people in the labor force in terms of construction, trying to find the right people. I remember a guy telling me at a NARO conference that he called his dad and said, hey, if you know anybody that can just read a ruler, I can give them a high-paying job, because they were that bad off. And so that's going to be the other issue. All these folks involving construction are going to have to deal with is finding appropriate labor to handle these jobs. So with that, Nydia, did we actually approve item number 4?
I don't believe so, Commissioners.
I know we had a motion and we had a second, okay, and then we had discussion. So all in favor of item number 4, which is resolution number 2706, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we move to item number 5, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 27.
Mr. Chairman, this item gets dropped. That's the one on Cypress Creek on Howard Lane. So we go to number 6.
Okay. All right, so we'll go to item number 6.
Mr. Chair, item number
6. Presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 2708, which is HACA declining the 2021 fiscal year capital fund program award.
Mr. Chair, this is a really straightforward. Yeah, this one is a really straightforward one that I hope we can dispatch in 30 seconds or less. Basically, we're no longer in public housing, so we're no longer eligible for capital fund. We were trying to play our bets to see if there was a way to use these last limited funds in some way in the Chalmers Quartz deal. There's not, and unfortunately, just from a timing perspective, we just need to return these dollars. It's not it's not something we can use. But in order to return them, HUD requires that the board formally decline them. As you know, we no longer get HUD capital fund, nor do we get HUD operating subsidy. It now comes to us through a project-based rental assistance voucher, and all the properties have converted. So we just simply need to issue a declination resolution by this board. JT, anything I missed?
Well, you said it very well. We are just unable to effectively use the funds, and the action to return them does require a board resolution.
We would ask for approval resolution 02708, declining the FY 2021 Capital Fund Program Award.
Commissioner Bailey.
I so move.
Let me get a second for Commissioner Carrington and then go Commissioner go into the discussion. Commissioner Bailey.
Which one? I just have a real quick question. Why would they go ahead and send this out to somebody like us?
I can explain that. The Department of HUD factors that fund late in the fall of each year. And at that time, we'd not yet closed on Chalmers West. We had not yet sold the group of 22 single family homes. And we were receiving our last bit of transitional funding for the demolition of the Rialto apartments. So it was factored to award to us. But by the time that we received the award in April of this year, we had already completed the sale of the homes and the transition of Chalmers West to RAD, so they're not even applicable to the program any longer.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Bailey is a former prosecutor. This is the right thing to do, is to return the money, right?
Absolutely. Unless you want to buy a refrigerator for the hot check room.
All right. So with that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2708.
I already got it.
I think you've already got a motion.
Okay. Yeah. So all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we move to item number 7, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 2709, roofing replacement for pathways at Carnello Hills apartment.
Jimmy, before I turn it over to you, let me set the stage for just a second. For every property that we converted to RAD, the mechanism we used was to set aside a reserve, which is a large pot of money. In some cases, it's bigger than in other places where we had larger capital needs. But it's a pot of money where we anticipated 20 years worth of physical needs that would be addressed. Everything from roofing to plumbing to electrical to windows. It's all decked out over a 20-year time frame that Jimmy keeps. So in the old days, we had capital fund. Every year we struggled to figure out, what would we use limited dollars on? And we were just, doing a lot of, patching and, trying to fund the most critical priorities. The beauty of RAD was that we were doing the longer term strategic thinking about how do we manage to keep this property in strong shape, over a 20-year period, ultimately a 40-year period, because that 20-year period will be renewed at least once. So for each property, and you're going to hear in just a moment about Coronado Hills, for each property, we have a large account, a reserve, for replacement of essential things. Today, we're going to talk about replacement of the roofs at Coronado. It has come up on a schedule. There may be some unintended things that come up, like if we have a massive hailstorm and there's a need to replace something sooner, we may have a more emergent repair that we have to bring to the board, but this is on a reserve for replacement schedule. And what we're going to do for each of these large procurements is we're going to go out with an RFP or an RFQ, in this case, request for proposals, and we'll get the best bids. And then we go and negotiate with that person to ask if we can try to, tie them down, and get an even better deal. Through the negotiation process and make sure that they meet our needs and expectations. So now Jimmy's got to tell you specifically about this particular RFP and this particular use of the reserve for replacement at Coronado. But just know, I thought it was important for you all to know how the process worked moving forward and that we have funds available. And if there's nothing else about RAD, that's the ability to have kind of ready resources to be able to fix things, improve things, has been a real blessing to us. So Jimmy,
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mike. Mike is exactly right. We're working with reserve for replacement funds and working in the schedule for Coronado Hills. The roofing replacements were scheduled for this coming year. We're a little bit early, but we'd like to take advantage of a small hail claim that was that's provided to us because we had a little damage on the site. There are no properties currently that have leaking roofs, although all of our roofs did receive a little bit of hail damage in the beginning of this year, as we all did. And so we're currently also looking at all of other sites and if we need to move any of those up in the schedule to address them sooner than later. But regarding Coronado Hills, it's a nice little 48-unit property, and we have gone out for bid. This is actually an IFB, invitation for bids, collected our bids, and awarded to the most responsive and responsible bidder. In this case, it's QA Roofing, who had fine references, has done a lot of good work in the Austin area, and we're looking forward to implementing the project there at Coronado Hills in the amount of $156,987.50. And I'm happy to answer any specific questions about the project if you have any.
Any questions to Mr. Teasdale? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number 7.
So move.
Has a motion been made? Second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Mr. Gerber, is there any more business that the board needs to take up?
Not that I'm aware of. Let me ask our Chief Operating Officer, Sylvia Blanco, is there anything else you wanted to bring to the board's attention? I know we have a big event happening at Rosewood Courts today.
Yes. Don't steal my thunder, please, Mr. Gerber.
Sorry.
yes, Commissioners, I wanted to share with you that we do have a fun event scheduled for this evening from 5 to 7 over at Rosewood Courts. And this will actually be our very first in-person, on-property event, face-to-face with our family. So I'm just so excited and thrilled to have that. And the purpose behind the event is to get our residents very critical feedback on what they would like to see at Rosewood Courts as part of the redevelopment effort to create the commemorative green space in honor of Emancipation Park, and also a welcome center that will help to tell the story about the rich history of Emancipation Park as well as Rosewood Courts itself. So we are going to have a DJ playing some music. We're going to have balloons. We're going to have free meals and lots of water on ice. And we're going to have a sort of an open house concept where they can come and go between 5 and 7 and get an update on the redevelopment project. And again, also get their feedback on what they would like to see, what kind of amenities, what kind of features they would like to see at the green space as well as at the Welcome Center. So really looking forward to that. We're going to have our developer partners out there. We're going to have the architect team. We're going to have folks translating in Spanish. We're going to have lots of staff volunteers out there as well. So if you have the time and would love to join us, would love to see you out there. I will say it's going to be hot, though. So bring plenty of sunscreen, bring a hat. But, yes, we're looking forward to it this evening.
Sylvia has volunteered me and all of the board for the dunking booth. So if anyone is – so I'll plan to see you all out there about 5:15.
Sylvia?
Hi, Chuck.
Yes, Commissioner.
Sylvia,
yes, ma'am.
First to celebrate the National Juneteenth Day celebration.
That is absolutely right. Yes, we're on the cusp of Juneteenth this Saturday, and of course we are definitely going to be, just bringing that connection to the Emancipation Park space that we are creating. So we're just super excited about being able to actually bring that story to life. Whereas right now, if you walk by Rosewood, you wouldn't know otherwise. So we're just super excited about bringing that story to full living color. So yes, we're going to have a great celebration. We're going to have and socially distance, definitely with all the safety protocols. But yeah, we're super excited about Juneteenth, of course, this coming Saturday. And along those lines, we are excited, of course, we are going to have a long holiday weekend. So we are honoring and acknowledging the Juneteenth holiday tomorrow, for the agency. And, we are going to have community workshop number 3. That is coming up on June 29th. That is a virtual event. So I know Commissioner Duncan Hall and Commissioner Apostolo, you have had an opportunity to join us on a couple of those. So we're going to have workshop number 3, which is the last one in that 3-part series. So we hope that everyone can join us for that one. And you should have an invitation in your inbox. If not, I am happy to forward that on to you all as well.
Commissioners, I'd like to just wrap up by saying I want to talk about the board meeting for just a moment. So our next board meeting is scheduled for Thursday, July 15th. And then the next board meeting after that, the August board meeting, staff is proposing that we cancel that board meeting. And we've consulted with Chairman Ritchie, and he's amenable to that with the board's concurrence. So after that would be the September 16th board meeting. We have five more board meetings this year. So July 15th, September 16th, October 21st, November 18th, and December 16th. We would ask that the board make sure that we have a lot of items we want to cover. And so we would ask for your active participation as you always do. So we're looking to cancel the August board meeting. We will have an October board meeting, so September, October, November, December. And my intent is if the board is comfortable with it, everybody's been vaccinated, we will endeavor to, once we get to September, we would like to go ahead and resume in-person board meetings. Of course, we'll follow the guidance of healthcare experts and such, but that's our intent if trends continue.
To begin in September, in-person board members?
Yes, ma'am. So the July 1 on July 15th would be a virtual board meeting. Although we have the ability to host, if a few board members want to come here, as we've done in the past, but to ensure the public's involvement, we want to stay online. And many of you prefer to just do it from the comfort of your home. But anyone who'd like to come here is welcome on July 15th. But it'll be a virtual meeting so that everybody can participate. And then August will be canceled, so that's August 19th. But then starting September 16th, October 21st, which again on the calendar is listed as optional, but we're proposing that we do it, November 18th and December 16th, we would propose that those be in-person meetings, subject to. So I want to advise you all of that. The other thing I wanted to advise you all of is that it is staff's intent. We've laid a marker out to around Labor Day. Our intent is to try to have a celebration for the completion of Chalmers East, which residents have already moved into. That property will be full by then. But it's appropriate to have a grand opening there at that site, and also to do a formal groundbreaking. Much like we did with Chalmers South when we did Chalmers East, the groundbreaking of Chalmers East, to do some kind of a celebration there. A lot of work has happened at Chalmers East. I'm going to try to get individual board members to different properties, not in a forum, but one or two at a time, because we've done a lot of development work, at our former public housing properties, now RAD or public, private, project-based rental assistance properties. But we'd love to – we'll be doing some individual board outreach and education just to make sure you all have a chance to see the work that the agency is doing over the over the course of the summer. So we'll work on that on an individual basis. For example, Commissioner Duncan Hall, I know you've had a passion for the educational work that we're doing. I'd love to connect you with with a couple members of our team and do a deeper dive. And we can do that with one other member. Again, just more fact-finding and just make sure you're seeing it. But any policy decisions, of course, by state law have to come to this body. So we will not talk about any policy, just a chance for you to see it. Same is true of actually seeing the properties themselves. So that's our story and for today. Thank you all very much. And yes, ma'am.
Well, I wanted to take this opportunity to wish the commissioners Happy Father's Day. Those, of course, who are fathers. It'd be nice to see you guys in person soon. So, Happy Father's Day.
Absolutely. I would also, before people hang up, at the very beginning of the call, I know we had a person call in, and I wanted to let you all know, since Lisa just popped on the line, Lisa jumped off so she could go work with that family, and we're working with them to try to see what we can do to assist them with their voucher situation. It does sound like a challenging individual issue, but I wanted you to know that connection got made. And Lisa, is there anything that the board needs to know, or you're just handling it with you and your team?
Yeah, we're handling it, but they currently have a voucher, so we met with them and let them know about their voucher, gave them an extension, gave them a little higher payment standard. Just staff was there to meet with them in person in the interview room to just sort of help them feel better and guide them through the process of what they need to do to be able to secure another place to live.
So they're not
going to
stay
Great.
Home?
No, they're not. They moved out. The current owner didn't renew their lease, apparently, and they were afraid, so they moved out. So I'm connecting them with Echo to see what kind of temporary place they could find to live. But they do have a voucher in hand, and we were able to increase their payment center, so they have a little more room to be able to shop for a place in terms of within the market.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Commissioners, one last thing I would mention is that we're able to actually meet with people because so many of our staff are vaccinated. The incentive you all provided has been wonderful, and we have over 220 members of our team who are vaccinated of the 247. So the incentive ends on July 5th. We're optimistic that we'll get more, but having well over 222, Gloria notes, but having having that high percentage makes this a safe place, and we're continuing to use social distancing and all the precautions, but we're pleased that so many folks have been vaccinated on the staff and that so many folks have been vaccinated at the properties. We're doing vaccination events. You heard about that earlier from Blar. And all sorts of activities to encourage vaccinations and to get people covered. So that's encouraging news that more than 90-some-odd% of the staff is covered. Any other questions you all have of us?
I think Mary.
I had a question. If Lisa, we could talk later. Can you give me a call after?
Yeah, I'll give you a call after. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty.
Great.
Is there anything else that we need to discuss before the board? Chuck, just as a heads up, I may need for you to preside over the meeting next month. In a moment of weakness, I agreed to be a panelist on a continuing legal education panel that is actually meeting in person in Austin. And I didn't realize at what time my panel would actually be presenting. And so it will be during the time period in which we have our board meeting. So so if you wouldn't mind, I'd appreciate it.
I've been caught in that situation where I volunteered 6 months, 8 months earlier, and then it got closed. I thought, why in the hell did I do that?
That's what I asked myself. And then
I understand. I don't volunteer anymore.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, with that, happy Father's Day. Happy Juneteenth. I want to say thanks for all that you do to the staff and to Mr. Gerber for your hard work, for keeping the train running, to our consultants like Wilson, and then also to members of our community who always hold us accountable, like Ms. Joseph. Ms. Yes. Joseph, I saw you testifying at the legislature. I tried to get to you, and I had a client pull me in a different direction. But I just wanted to commend you on your passionate advocacy on your issues related to transportation. And so we appreciate you coming and holding us accountable and bringing issues to our attention that we may not otherwise learn of, which helps improve the quality of life for our residents. So with that, I just want to say everybody enjoy a great weekend. And I look forward to seeing you in person in September, if not before then. Take care.